negotiations for salespeople. Well, let's start with a definition. What are we talking about when we're talking about negotiations? Here's a definition. When two or more parties attempt to resolve their differences and come to an agreement that all parties support. Okay, the words to fill in there are differences, agreement, and support. Now, the issue with salespeople is that it is often difficult to recognize a negotiating opportunity. Fill those words in. Recognize a negotiating opportunity. That's the issue. Now, let's just think about this a little bit. How do negotiations in the world of salespeople, how do negotiations usually happen? I mean, what does this look like? And the first thing I would say to you, well, rarely the way they tell you. You know, you have this idea that is portrayed by the people who make a living teaching negotiations, that a negotiation is this formal kind of arrangement where there's two or three sides on one table and two or three sides on another table, and we agree to negotiate and we set up a formal time and so on. And that is true, but it's not generally true in sales. I mean, that's okay if we're, you know, United Auto Workers and Ford Motor Company. That's the way it's going to happen. Or if we're, you know, dealing with North Korea. But in sales, it rarely happens in that formal and structured a way. So we need to understand that, you know, the first issue is just recognizing when we're involved in negotiating opportunity. So when does it usually happen? Well, when a customer asks a negotiating question, that opens up an opportunity. What's a negotiating question? It's something like this. Write this down. Here's an example. Can we buy a few more and qualify for a lower price? Can we buy a few more and qualify for a lower price? Now, that would be, if you hear that question or that kind of question, that's the customer opening up a negotiating opportunity to you. They're saying by the question, negotiating question is one that asks for some concession and leaves open the opportunity, the possibility for them making some concession. You know, that's a negotiating question. So that's an opportunity to negotiate. Here's another one. When they make a counteroffer, and we hear this a lot, you know, a customer says, well, I'm not going to pay you $75, does it? No, I'll give you $70. That's an example. I won't pay you $75, but I'll pay you $70. Okay, what they're saying is they want to buy it from you, and they want a concession. That's an opportunity to negotiate. It's not necessarily, you know, a chance to lower your price. It's an opportunity to negotiate. Here's another opportunity. When your customer voices an opening objection, something like, quote, your terms aren't quite right. Your terms aren't quite right. Now, what does that tell you? Well, you got an opportunity to make some changes here. There's a difference between what you want and what your customer wants, and there's an opportunity to resolve that difference. That's a negotiation. So there's some examples of when we get into a negotiation. Let's keep going. As a result, when else do negotiations happen in sales? As a result of a salesperson's good work. And what I mean by that is, customer wants to do business with you. Negotiations don't happen unless the customer wants to do business with you. So you have done some good work to get to this point. You built a relationship. You have understood the customer. You have proposed a solution, a product or a service solution that the customer wants. And now the issue is some differences that you need to resolve. So typically, negotiation is a result of your good work. And salespeople who never get into negotiations, it's often because they haven't done good work. This customer doesn't want it. So there's no negotiation. Number four, oftentimes negotiations happen after a deal iron out changes and refinements. Now, we see this often in big projects, you know, like construction projects, where we know there's going to be changes and refinements along the way. So the basic deal is cut, but now they want to change this, or they want to change that, or they want to add this, or add that, or subtract that. And those are opportunities to negotiate, because there is a difference that has to be ironed out. Also, in big professional service projects, when if you're a consultant like myself, or a company provides business services of some kind, you got a major project. Oftentimes, in the course of that project, there will be changes and refinements, and that's a place for negotiation, a place for salespeople to be involved. Number five, when else do negotiations really happen in sales, and what's the reality of it? Well, when you initiate the discussion. Now, typically, we'll talk about this in the next page, how you can initiate the discussion. But oftentimes, you can be the person who creates an opportunity to negotiate. And most often, when do negotiations happen in sales? Most often, with a good customer who wants to do business with you. So, rarely do we see two sides meeting formally, not in our world. I mean, maybe in the politicians, but not in our world. In our world, these are the kinds of times, the kinds of circumstances that give us opportunity to negotiate. Turn the page. Let's think about this. Let's think a little deeper about this whole issue of negotiating. And again, from the perspective of a salesperson, I believe the real trick, the obstacle for most of us, is leading the customer from a take-it-or-leave-it position. Now, that's the customer's kind of view, to a let's-negotiate stance. So the real trick is getting them to negotiate so that you don't hear a no, you increase your sales, you increase your deals, because you're not walking away with no's, you're opening up opportunities to negotiate. So the question then becomes, how do we get them to negotiate? How, instead of just looking at our offer and saying yes or no, how do we get them to say, well, let's talk? And here's three things you can do. Number one, mention it to everyone. What you're doing here is planting seeds in the customer's mind that you are open to discuss possibilities other than what you've put in your proposal, or you mentioned in your sell sheet, or whatever it is. Here's an example of how you do this. You say to everybody involved on the customer's side something like this: we believe the best deals are the result of a collaboration between the customer and ourselves. So if there are aspects of our proposal that need to be adjusted, we'd be happy to discuss that with you. Now, what you're doing is planting seeds. So the customer then looks at the proposal and says, well, okay, it's not necessarily a yes or no. Maybe we should talk about this. Now, I want to make a distinction here between planting seeds that put in the customer's mind the opportunity to negotiate. That's one thing. Broadcasting that you'll lower your price is something else. That's a no-no, whereas this is a more positive and productive thing to do. So we're not saying, if you don't like our price, we'll fix that. We're not saying that. We are saying we're open to discuss aspects of our proposal with you. Now, that's a different statement, and I want to make clear on that. Number two, probe for feedback and take notes. In other words, as you are making your proposal, as you're talking to the customer, as you're doing your demonstration, you are constantly probing for feedback, and you're taking note of that feedback, because these are opportunities that you're discovering where there are differences. And that's the definition of a negotiating opportunity. Say things like this, you look a little doubtful, if in fact they do. Now, that's a question. It's saying, what do you thinking about here? And by the way, that's okay to ask that. What are you thinking? How does this fit my proposal, my product, this demonstration? How does it fit? And you get it. I mean, those are open-ended questions. Is this along the lines of what you're looking for? And you're constantly probing, trying to get some feedback, trying to understand, are there differences here between what the customer is expecting and what the customer wants and what I'm proposing? If so, those are opportunities to negotiate. Number three, toss out trial balloons. Trial balloons. Trial balloon is very similar to the first one where you're planting a seed, but it's more specific to pieces of your proposal or your offer. You say things like, well, we may be able to modify that part of our proposal, or we have a few options on this part. And again, you're just tossing it out and seeing if they take the bait. And if they say, well, what can we, you know, what are your other options? Now we're into a negotiation. See, again, the issue with salespeople is that negotiations aren't, I mean, we don't formally say we're going to negotiate. It happens much more informally. It's a give and take between a salesperson who is trusted and sophisticated in what they're doing and a customer who wants to do business with that person. We need to get them to that point where we can do some give and take. Turn the page. Here's the key principle. I am amazed at the power of this statement in negotiations. And we often forget it. Negotiations are always about two things, the deal and the people. Two issues. Now, let's just go through this. And another way of saying that is the content of the deal is one thing. The feelings of the people is something else. And they are enormously intertwined. You can't be successful at negotiating if you focus exclusively on the content and forget the feelings. You cannot focus on the agreement and neglect the egos of the people involved. You cannot focus on the cognitive without also dealing with the emotional. Just imagine, you know, two pieces of rope twisted together. Can you see that visual picture in your mind? That's what I'm trying to convey here, that when you're negotiating, the deal and the people are separate but enormously intertwined. And if you forget one, you lose the other. Too often we focus on the deal and we miss the fact that we need to spend just as much time on the feelings. Let me give you an example. This happened to me this week. I, in my position as a sales trainer and speaker and so on, consultant, I have lots of close relationships with a number of client companies. And every now and then, I get a phone call or an email or something from somebody selling software. Who wants me to, somehow be involved with their software. And sometimes they want an endorsement or sometimes they want me to sell it on their behalf. And generally, you know, I'm really not all that much interested because I haven't seen anything that knocked my socks off. But about a month ago, I had another guy approach me with software and it was a contact management software for salespeople and it had some features to it. I thought, this is kind of interesting. So we had a phone conversation. He did a little web demo. Okay, I'm interested. Next step, send me your deal. And then we set up a time, 2:00 Eastern Time, for a phone conference. When I got the deal, it looked to me like he sent me the wrong stuff. You know, it was like, this isn't what we talked about. So I'm beginning to think, well, I don't know about the deal itself, but this guy, I'm not quite sure this guy's on top of it. And then instead of calling at 2:00, he called at 3:25. And I was on the phone. He left a message here for the conference call. I called him back and said I was expecting it too. He said, oh, sorry, he made a mistake. He had it down as 2 o'clock Central, not Eastern times. He was an hour off. I said, yeah, what about, you were 25 minutes late then. If that were true, you're 25 minutes late. Yep, he was. Could we talk now? And maybe I was a little too sensitive. Maybe my ego was in the way. But I thought, if you cannot keep good track of your time, if you're not even going to apologize for being, if I believe you, you know, 25 minutes late, if I don't believe you, an hour and 25 minutes, you're not even going to apologize, you're not going to be on top of it, I don't want to do business with you. No, can we talk now? No. Can we talk next week? No. I don't want to do business with you. It's not the deal. It's not your product. It's you. I don't want, you see, these things are intertwined. Here's where I learned this lesson in negotiations in a way that I remember to this day. A number of years ago, I took a 3-day intensive program on negotiations. I went to a workshop and spent 3 days learning negotiations. And the final exercise in this, there was about maybe a dozen people in this program. It was very intense. And the final exercise was for us to negotiate the air traffic controllers strike that happened in Ronald Reagan's presidency. And so this was a case study, and we were going to negotiate and see if we could bring a different resolution. And half of the group was labor, half the group was management, and so on and so forth. And I was appointed the chief negotiator for the management team, somebody else on the other side. Okay, we did our caucus. We did our pre-negotiation deal, and the pre-negotiation deal was we agreed we would present first our position, and then labor would present their position, and then we would follow a format and discuss this and negotiate it. So we had ourselves all ready to go. Labor, who was meeting in a different room had in this simulation, had themselves ready to go. We came in for the negotiation, and labor said, listen, We know we said we wanted you guys to go first, but we really have the solution here, and if you don't mind, we're just going to jump in here and give it to you. We said, yes, we do mind. You're breaking the rules, and we got into this tussle about wait a minute, this isn't what we agreed. The format is different. We don't trust you, and we never got to negotiate. We never got to the deal because we didn't have trust in the people. They lost our trust because they violated the rule. See, it wasn't about the content. It wasn't about the feelings. It wasn't about the agreement. It was about the egos involved. It wasn't about the cognitive piece. It was about the emotional piece. That made a major impact on me. It's a lesson that I've kept with me. I won't tell you how many years. It's been a long time. But I remember feeling the great understanding I had that, hey, the emotions of the people in a negotiation are maybe even more important than the deal itself. Let's fill in the blanks. Just as many sales are lost because of the people issues as are lost due to differences in the deal. Fill that in. This is a key principle. You got to understand it if you're going to be effective negotiators. Turn the page. Key competency. See the situation from the customer's point of view. Man, that sounds so simple. That is so huge. If you cannot see the situation from the customer's point of view, you ought not to be in sales, A. B, you ought not to be in negotiations. And this is not an either or. You know, it's not that you see it or you don't. It's a continuously moving spectrum. You can always understand the customer better than you do. And the negotiator who sees the situation more clearly, more deeply, from the customer's point of view, is the negotiator who has the greatest competency and strength in negotiations. It is the biggest issue. Now let's talk about some very specific strategies. 2 strategies as it relates to preparation. Know your limits. Before you offer to modify something, or you're asked to modify something, know what your bottom line is. Let's do this. Over in the side there where it says key strategies, you've got a big white space. Draw a box in that white space, you know, as big as you can make it, and then starting at the top line, draw two lines down equally spaced so that we've got three columns, up and down columns going across, okay? Now, what I want you to do is then go draw some horizontal lines, you know, just two or three. So now we've got a bunch of boxes, smaller boxes in that one. All right. In the middle column, write the word deal breaker. And then in the last of the three columns, write ideal, I-D-E-A-L. Now, in the second and in the first column, it should be blank. Move down to the second space and put price, and then terms in the next one down, and then delivery, and warranty, and as many, you know, just as many aspects. Now, these are all aspects of the deal. No matter what it is you're proposing, it's not just about price. There are other variables. And the question, and what you need to do to know your limits is know what is the limit beyond which you cannot go. So let's say you're offering something, you're offering a piece of equipment here, selling somebody $1,000 piece of equipment, and that's your offer. So you write for price underneath the word ideal, $1,000. Now, what is your absolute deal breaker, underneath which you cannot go? And you put in that column $750. So if you know that if you go back to your boss and say to him or her, they'll pay us $749, the boss is going to say, absolutely not. The lowest you can go is $750. Now, the ideal is $1,000, lowest is $750. What about terms? You do the same thing. What about delivery? You do the same thing. All the different aspects of the deal, you should have an understanding of what the deal breaker is and what your ideal is. Now, the difference between those two are the area of the room to maneuver. So this is a key step in preparation. Know your limits. Number two, know your customer. Know what your customer wants. You can do the same thing, the same matrix, for the customer. What do you think the customer's deal breaker is? What do you think the customer's ideal is in each of these? And that is a way of forcing yourself to think from the customer's perspective. Just do one of these little matrices for you, do one from the customer, and see where the differences are and where the similarities are. See if you can't understand the customer at a deeper, deeper level. That's the preparation. And when you're selling anything that's got any bucks to it, you know, other than, you know, $2 or $3 thing, but, I mean, you know, we're talking $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $100,000, man, you ought to know your limits. It's worth it to spend some time analyzing beforehand. Let's talk about positioning down at the bottom of the page. Position yourself with power. Now, in every negotiation, there is a sense of power that lies on one side or the other. Somebody's got more power than the other. And generally, the more power you have in a negotiation, the more likely that you'll end that negotiation in a way that's closer to your ideal than the customer's. So here's some ways, some questions to ask about power. First one, are you okay with walking away from the deal? Now, if you are okay with walking away from it, that gives you tremendous power. Let me give you an example. I just, earlier this spring, I had a national association call me and invite me to speak at their convention. I said, okay. And, you know, that's a typical thing. Okay, it's a routine part of my business. Then they sent me a contract, and the contract was ridiculous. I mean, they just wanted me to swear this and that and they had like 15 ways that they would not pay me and all this. And so at first I was just going to toss it and not do it. And then because I was offended, I was personally offended by the contract. But instead, I calmed down and I crossed out everything, rewrote a more reasonable thing and sent it back to him. Okay, so now you see, we're in a negotiation. And the meeting planner called me and said, "Gee, we got your, you know, we got your thing back, and clearly we have some issues. Clearly we did." And she said, "You know, it may be that if we can't resolve this, maybe we'll have to get somebody else." And I said, "You know, I agree with you. As a matter of fact, you might even want to find somebody else right now. I'm not sure we can resolve this." Now, as soon as I said that, you know what happened? The tone changed enormously because I got power. I got power because I was willing to walk away from it. And it was okay with me if we didn't do this. Now, if it's okay with you that you don't get this one deal, then you got power. If you're desperate and you have to have this deal, man, the other side has power. So that's an issue. Second one. Are you the first choice? And I mean that from the customer's point of view. Are you the first choice from the customer's perspective? If so, you got power. If not, you don't. To what degree are there other options for the customer? If you're the only option, man, that puts you in a powerful position. If the customer's got 10 other people he can go to for the same thing, you got no power. To what degree do you have the competitive advantage? You know, there's other things available, but everybody knows yours is the best. If yours is clearly the competitive advantage, you got power. To what degree do you have the history of past performance? What I mean by that is, have you got a relationship, a history with this particular customer that goes back and you're a proven source and so on? To the degree that you have the history with this customer gives you power. To what degree has the customer invested time and money? Time and money. If the customer has invested a lot of time and money bringing the deal to this point, then that gives you power. If you've invested a lot of time and money, that gives the customer power. Number seven, to what degree are there time pressures on the customer? Customer's got to make a deal today, then that gives you power. You got to make a deal today, that gives the customer power. See that? So these are issues you kind of sort through, and you try to position yourself before you get into a negotiation, and any of these things you can bring to yourself gives you power. Let's turn the page, talk about tactics. Here's some very specific negotiating tactics. Number one, get the other person to propose first, if at all possible. Reason for that is, then you can react. And oftentimes, what they propose is different than what you expected. So if they propose first, that gives you knowledge. You have more knowledge, and knowledge is on your side. So it's always a good idea, if you can, to get the other person to propose first. In other words, you say something like, there's aspects of this that we could change if it seemed to be best. And the customer says, tell you what, instead of paying you $75, we'll give you $70 for that case for this. Okay, you got the customer to propose. Now you know where they're at. And now you can react and go from there. So it always gives you a little bit more power and a little bit more information if you get them to propose first. Number two, be careful about negative emotions. In other words, don't get upset. Don't react negatively to anything the customer may say. When you do that, what you do is you interject negative emotions. You take it from a discussion of a deal to something that is personal. And that is a weakness in a negotiation. You don't ever want, now even though you might be churning inside, you don't ever want to display a negative emotion. You don't want to say, that's crazy, what do you know, you know. No, you don't want to do that. Because when you display an emotion, it's an indication of your weakness. It's a personal issue. Number three, on the other side, be careful about positive emotions. Now, you know, in other words, being really excited about something they say or, you know, really happy that they said that, because a positive emotion, you displaying a positive emotion, does this almost the same thing as a negative emotion. It makes it personal, and by implication, it indicates what will upset you, the opposite of what makes you happy. You're better off being, in terms of emotion, trying to be as flat emotionally in a negotiation as possible, not displaying any positive or negative emotion on your part, because that will expose weakness and make it personal. Number four, trade concessions, don't give them up. Here's an example. A customer says, could you deliver it in a week instead of 2 weeks? And if you say, yeah, we could do that, okay, you just gave up a concession. Instead of giving it, trade it. You could say, he says, you know, can you deliver it in 1 week instead of two or three? You could say, well, I think we could. If we could, would you be willing to pay the invoice, say, in 10 days? Now, what you've done is trade. He says, yeah, we can pay in 10 days. Say, okay, we can, and we'll be happy to deliver it in a week. Now, you've traded. You see that? You haven't given it up. You've traded. That's what a negotiation is all about, trading. Number five, be careful about splitting the differences. This is a gambit. This is a tactic they teach purchasing people. In other words, they say, well, you know, your price is $75. I just said $70. Tell you what, let's split the difference. Sounds reasonable. In effect, splitting the difference is you discounting. Just think about it. Whenever you split the difference between what you said you wanted and what they said they wanted, whenever you split the difference, you just discounted. So be careful about that. Sounds so reasonable, but basically it's just a gambit to get you to discount. Number six, ask a lot of questions. When in doubt, ask a question. I think on every program I've ever done, I have said, when in doubt, ask a question, because question is such a powerful tool. Number seven, seek and reiterate all areas of agreement. In other words, from time to time, say, well, we're in agreement about this and this and this and this. Is that right? And what you're doing is you're building a sense of momentum. You're emphasizing the areas that you have agreed to, and by doing so, you de-emphasize the areas of disagreement. You make the agreement seem larger, and it's much more likely that you're going to come to a final agreement. So from time to time, in the course of a discussion, bring up and reiterate all the areas that you agree on. Number eight, share the value of any concessions, the economic value. If he says, gee, can you deliver it in 1 week instead of three, you can say, yeah, we can do that. Now, that'll upset our system. And it'll cost us, you know, probably an additional $250. I wonder if you can you pay the invoice in 10 days? That'll help offset that. See, what you did is you, instead of just making a concession, you put an economic value on it. And now you've got something to work with. Share the value of any concessions. Number nine, don't advertise your willingness to concede price. This is the point I made earlier in the program. And I'll tell you what, I see this all the time. I mean, here's an example. Last week, now I'm going to be. My company is out of space here. We're in an office suite that we need to grow out of, and so my lease is up here, the building that I've been in for like 8 years in October, and I'm out looking for new office space. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of office space out there these days, and last week I looked at, you know, five or six different opportunities, and I would say, of the five or six that I looked at, I would say probably four said to me, here's our price, but, you know, we're willing to work with you on price. Or, here's our price, but, we'd be happy to look at something less. In other words, I mean, why would I pay any of them what they're asking when they have already advertised their willingness to discount? I mean, why would I accept the beginning price from any of them? I wouldn't, because they advertised it. I'd be stupid to do that. Number 10, personalize the good things, depersonalize the bad. It's a very specific technique, whereas you talk in second and third person. In other words, you say, if it was a good thing, you say, John, you are creative. That's a great idea. Now, you see, you made it personal. John, you are creative. That's a great idea. That was, you know, if he says something is good. Now, if it's a bad thing, you don't say, John, you're a jerk. That's a bad idea. No, you say something about the idea, the thought, the concept. I'm not sure that concept will work. You know, see, you're talking about you're using third person, depersonalizing it. If it's a good thing, you make it personal. That's a sophisticated tactic for negotiations. Number 11, look for a creative solution. Creative solution. Typically, you know, if it's a sophisticated negotiation, there is a solution out there that neither one of you, the customer or you, anticipated initially. It was probably not in your beginning thing, and it took a creative thought to come to it. And I'm going to add number 12. Sorry I didn't get this in the list here, but I want you to write in number 12. Be tactful and polite. Be tactful and polite. Extremely important, because you want to remember the basic principle behind negotiations, and that's it's about two things. It's about the people and the deal. It's about the emotions and the content. It's not one or the other. So you don't say something like, that's wrong, you're wrong. You don't say that. It may be true, but that's, you know, casts a negative emotion. You say something like, thanks for that thought. I'm just not sure that interpretation is 100% accurate. So what you're doing is you're being tactful. You're being polite. You're protecting at all times the ego and the emotions of the other person. Well, I have two questions. Here's the first one. How do I respond to the comment that I'm too high? How do we respond to the comment that your price is too high? Well, you know, if you want to get them into a negotiation, when they say your price is too high, you can say something like, oh, gee, I appreciate your candor, Mary. There may be something we can do with the price if we can make some adjustments in some other aspects. Should we talk? Now, if they say, yeah, okay, you just entered into a negotiation. So you've used their question or their comment, their objection, as a door opener to enter into negotiation. And you did that by saying, there may be something we can do if we can make some adjustments in other aspects. And there's always other aspects. And that's something that, you know, I'll tell you what, salespeople, and I'm just as guilty of this as everybody else, salespeople have a tendency to look at the product or the service they're selling and to look at the price and say, those are the only issues. Man, there are dozens of other issues. There's the simple things like delivery and terms and so on, but warranties, packaging, but there's a thousand things connected with an offer. We just sometimes get so focused on the product and the price, we think that's all there is to it. There's lots of things that we can adjust other than just the price. So what you want to do is say something like this. You know, let's go back to, he says, your price is too high. And you say, well, gee, you know, I appreciate you sharing that with me. There may be some things we can do with the price if we can make some adjustments in other aspects. Should we talk about it? If he says no, then he doesn't want it. He's just being, you know, irritable. If he says, yeah, okay, then you're entering into a negotiation, and you know what your bottom line is, and you're going to ask for a concession and do just the kinds of things we talked about. Okay, here's the second one. We are heading into a serious negotiation with a customer for a big deal. Anything specific you would recommend? Well, let me repeat this. We are heading into a serious negotiation with a customer for a big deal. Anything specific you would recommend? Now, I'm assuming that there's going to be a formal meeting, in which case the two sides are going to formally negotiate. Like this would be an exception to most of what salespeople run into. As I mentioned earlier, this one is a formal. Sounds like it's a formal negotiation. Anything specific you would recommend? The answer is yes. In a formal negotiation, number one, I would do that matrix that we talked about. You know, taking every aspect of the deal and saying, what is our deal breaker and what is our ideal position? And I would do that, certainly do that, and certainly do that from your customer's perspective so that you have a sense of what your customer wants. And if you're just guessing, then, boy, I would sure try to gather some more information about the customer and what they want any way I could before I go into negotiations. remember, there's the basic strategy for negotiations is to know your customer. That gives you the ultimate power in negotiation. The more you know the customer, the deeper you know what the customer wants, customer's hot buttons, and so on and so forth, the better equipped you are to negotiate. So a couple specific recommendations. Number one, yes, do that matrix beforehand. Number two, you ought to have a team, you know, and you ought to rehearse and everybody know their places and their roles in the team. Who's going to speak? Who's going to speak to other issues? You know, like if this issue comes up, who's the expert in that can speak to that one? And everybody ought to know the limits. You ought to agree on a format beforehand. And frankly, you ought to include your best people. If it's a serious negotiation with a big customer, you know, over a big deal, then you know, some of the executives ought to be involved in that negotiation. The last thing I did the last company I worked for as a salesperson, an employee for somebody else, the last thing I did was be a part of a team that negotiated a major contract with one of my good customers. Now, I had built this customer up to the point where they wanted almost a sole source agreement. To give you an idea of the size of how big and important it was, at that time I had a $5 million territory annually, and this deal, when it was finally done, they agreed to $7 million of annual purchases. So it was a big deal. I mean, this one deal was larger than the rest of my territory combined. And frankly, even though I thought I was great, it was bigger than me, you know. And I wasn't. And when we got to the point that it was a serious negotiation, I took a back seat to my manager and to his manager, and it was a team of the three of us plus some other operational people who were a part of that negotiation. So I would say if it really is a serious negotiation and a big deal, bring in your best people, and have a team. And do some rehearsal and some planning for the team. And that's how you handle it. I mean, just a couple specific ideas for that kind of situation.
Hi, Dave. Got a question. If you're in a competitive bid situation, what are some strategies that you can use to make sure that you get a last look?
Yeah, great question, because, you know, we have these things where people send out bids and you want to send a bid back in and so on. Well, a couple strategies that I would do is number one, it begins when you get the bid, and I never respond to a bid without first going to the company and trying to dig deeper and understand the situation at a deeper level. In other words, if I get sent something that says, please bid this, my first response is call them and say, I'd like to come and talk to you about it. And what I'm trying to do is know the customer, find out some information that's going to give me an opportunity to go beyond just the specifications on the bid. So it begins way back then, you know, so with an opportunity to dig deeper. Second thing I do is I never mail a bid. And again, this is part of what I do up front. If they say, we want you to bid this, I say, okay, I'd like to deliver it in person and discuss it with you. Is that okay? Can we make an appointment to do that? And if they will not take the time to have me present this to them, then I think they're not serious about doing business with me. And I'm actually not even going to pursue it. So that's sort of my qualification up front, is when somebody says we're going to bid this, I say, okay, I want to talk to them about it, and I want them to agree to talk to me and allow me to present it in person. And if they won't allow me to present it in person, they say, mail it in, I'm not going to. I figure I'm just one of many. I don't have an opportunity to distinguish myself. It's not worth the time. Now, when I'm presenting it, this is where I'm face-to-face with them, competitive situation, I'm presenting it, and this is where I'm doing the thing of asking for feedback, planting the seed, and so on. As we go through it, you know, I'm going to say, okay, you know, if there are aspects of this that we're a little off on, There's certainly room. We have some other options. There's certainly room to discuss it. I'm going to say that to everybody. I'm going to go back to that front page, you know. So I'm going to plant the seeds. As I'm proposing, I am not just going to hand it to them and say, here's what we think on this. You know, here's our response to this. And then I'm going to probe each time. Say, how does that fit? And then we're thinking about doing this. Does that feel okay to you? And then here's our response to this piece of it. How does that, how does that sit with you? And I'm constantly probing, constantly digging for opportunities to talk about it. And then, when I'm done, what I want to do is what I've done throughout the course of this whole time is give them the sense that I can be flexible on some of these things. If you can be flexible, I'm the guy to deal with here. It's not a take it or leave it. So that I'm planting that seed. And it'd be great if we can begin a negotiation now. If they got to go through some formal process, okay. At least I've planted the seed, and hopefully I'm the guy they're going to call and want to talk about making some adjustments. And that's what I'm going to do. The trade concessions. It begins when you know they want to bid something. That's where you're actively involved there. It extends to how you deliver the proposal and what seeds you plant in their mind at that point in time. And, there's some things that'll, in sales, nothing's 100%, but that'll help you. That'll make a big difference.
All right, Dave. How do you deal with the customer that wants to make entertaining part of the negotiation process?
Wow, make entertaining part of it. In other words, they negotiate if you buy them dinner at the steakhouse? Something like that? Well, I always go. I always have a response to entertaining, and generally, as a general rule, I'm pretty comfortable with the idea of entertaining, providing it is not a gift. It is time spent together, and I go back to the days in Detroit. When the automobile industry was fat and sassy and terribly unproductive. And typically, the sellers to Ford and General Motors and people like that had expense budgets in the tens of thousands, and they gave away season tickets, and they gave away golf club memberships and so on. I don't like that. I think that borders on bribery. I would prefer entertaining a customer where the two of us are spending time together. So, as a general rule, I want to do that as much as I can. Now, from a very practical perspective, the question you have to ask is it worth it? If you're going to spend, $300 or $400 on taking two customers and their spouses to a nice dinner and something afterward, and you're going to talk business and et cetera, you just got to decide whether it's worth it, it's a return on investment decision. Okay, I could probably get this piece of business. But it's going to cost me $300 or $400 entertaining. Should I? And I don't know. It's a return on investment issue. If you think it's worth it, then yeah, I'm okay with it. Providing you're spending time together, you're building a relationship, you're getting to know each other. It's okay with me.
Dave. How do you negotiate when you don't have any power?
Yeah. You concede, hope to get the business. You have no power. See, if you have no power, you're going to be lucky. You're going to be lucky if you can walk away with the deal, because all the power is on the other side. That's why, the negotiations is not an event that is separate and apart from the whole of the sales process. The best negotiators are the people who've done a great job selling. Remember what I said when we began? When did negotiations happen? When the salesperson has done a good job. When the company, the customer wants to do business with you, that's when it happens. So the negotiation is part of that whole thing. If you have no power, let's review that page a minute. What does it mean to have no power? It means they think you're just the same as everybody else. You have no advantage. It means you are not the first choice. It means the customer is not invested in you. It means that you're desperate for the deal. It means means the opposite of those things. If that's the position you're in, you're not going to negotiate. You're going to beg. You're going to be lucky need to walk away with the deal, having discounted the whole thing, and walk away with your tail between your legs, being thankful that you got something. If you have no power, you're just in a miserable situation. Sometimes, you know, sometimes these are not the answers we want to hear. Sorry. Enjoyed this time. I hope this has been helpful to you. Go forth.